grace and faith were used on us, not by us.
The gospel of grace.
You are the thing that was in the mind of God.
The gospel of peace.
This plan was put together by God and Jesus before the creation of anything else.
That was Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for Friday, January 19, 2018, broadcasting from the home of redemptionism where we love every train of thought, visiting our station of freedom. We're coming to you from the Gospel Revolution studios right here in Eva, Alabama, where we say that a text without a context is a pretext. But right now from Palm Beach Gardens, with more consistent, persistent, repetitive CPR of the gospel, is the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. Hello, Michael.
Good evening, Mr. Donald Beresford Bartlett.
Indeed, that is my name.
Yeah, and I know when you're in trouble, that's the name to use. I can feel you getting ready to run for the Alabama Hills when I use that.
The only other people that use that is the IRS and the cops, you know.
Yeah, and your mama.
And your mama. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I'm replacing your mama here.
That'll be interesting. That'll be very interesting.
Donald Beresford Bartlett.
Yes, mama.
So tell me how your week has gone. Goodness, since our interview with the interview you did, let me tell you. This was one of those PowerCasts where I got to listen to it for the first time, just like everybody else. And my goodness, Don, let me say to you, first off, your expertise and talent doing interviews is just growing exponentially. It really is quite amazing. You have a way to get to the story.
Now, if I can turn that into cash.
Well, wouldn't that be nice? Yeah. Uh-huh. But yeah, you and also Nardos's level of honesty and integrity.
Oh, boy.
I love everything about Nardos, to tell you the truth. I've not found a thing about him that is like, oh, well, we can tolerate that. You know, he's already done so much for the gospel revolution. We certainly got the better end of the deal here. I hope he doesn't figure that out real soon.
Well, he's already started in on helping with the website. So, and he's he's always there. He's ready and he's willing and he's happy. Oh, my gosh. Have you ever heard a guy giggle as much?
I know. It is really wonderful. You can tell he enjoys life. And even more so now that he's come into the gospel. And he looks back over this, as all of you guys heard in the interview, a very recent, quite traumatizing decisions that he made, and he laughs about it. I mean, most of us would try to, you know, suck all the sympathy out of it we could, at least for a couple of years anyway. And he's not doing that at all. It's like, goodness gracious. So, excitement about this new edition, excitement about the different things that's coming around the corner. I'm excited about the upcoming YouTube conference that I'm doing in Australia in Kingaroy. The guys are putting that together. We'll let people know. We're trying to figure out exactly just how techy we can get with this. Can it be viewed by other people around the world if they want to tap into it? These are things that we know can be done, but we're not sure that our first time around with this that we can actually pull the full Monty off. And we're going to do all that we can.
Now let me just interrupt you there, mate. Family, if you would like to have a Skype video conference in your area, if you would like that to happen, call us. Email us at freedom@gospelrevolution.com. We've only got 3 more slots open for this year. Get in fast or wait till next year. But if you would like to have Mike address you in your area, 4 or 5 people in a lounge room.
Oh, yeah.
And look, there is nothing to pay.
No.
It's free.
Exactly.
All you do is you take up a collection at your end, if you want, to maybe pay for bloody, coffee and scones or something. And that's all you need. You don't need any more. It's free.
Yep.
We are here to serve you. So we got three slots left open. One's been taken. Call us at
832-318-9339. 832-318-9339.
Or write us at freedom@gospelrevolution.com. Either way, we'll get it. You'll have your place secured, and we will have plenty of time. Now, don't think that because maybe you want to do something in next December. Well, get in now because there's only three spots left. So, man, I'm looking forward to King of Roy. I'm looking forward to all those good Aussie accents.
Yeah, these folks seem to be real quality folks. And, you know, they've got just a variety of people who are interested. They don't know whether or not they think this is true. Now, that just thrills me to have a group like that. You know, some are pretty well sold on it. I don't think any of them are just totally, you know, head diving yet into the pool, but they're testing the waters for sure, and at different degrees and places of testing the waters. So, you know, I really want to rely on the Holy Ghost, the great teacher, to know exactly what these people need to hear.
Well, this week we have a bunch of emails to get through,
Michael. Let's get in them.
Yep. The first one comes from Sean Handsome Smith. Is it Handsome or Anson? Sean Handsome Smith. And he writes, I used to be very religious until I discovered that religion died in the first century. Christianity was my former religion, but it started off dead. Christianity started off like a pile of dry bones. An organized religion is a pile of skeletons, dead, dry bones that must be assembled by a professional who knows how to do it.
Come on now, Sean, tell us what you really think here.
Yeah. The professional is part of the clergy, which controls and animates the skeleton. The clergy wires a skeleton together with the laity. The clergy use emotion to get the skeleton to move as if it were a living being. The pastor is the clergyman in charge of each local skeleton. He or she serves as a puppet master to animate the skeleton. Puppet masters use two schools of thought to animate their charges. One, fear of loss. The second, hope of gain. John Bartlett taught me that fear of going to hell and hope of going to heaven are two examples. The puppet masters must keep the emotions flowing through the skeleton or Christianity will collapse in one big heap. By way of contrast, love is a living energy that no one can see. Love can't die or be created. She's as real as released energy, invisible as air and powerful as wind. Love is a family of people joined together through a common ancestor. Love is a person caring for a friend. Love is a group of strangers going out to help people affected by a typhoon. Love is a living entity who makes the universe her home. Nature knows her. People know her through her tender and generous acts expressed through others. Love is not a puppet that controls people. She is the air people breathe and the beat of every heart. Love is the solid rock on which humanity stands, while religion crashes into a pile of dead, dry bones. They've been that way for 2,000 years. Question for Mike. Mike, can you see Christianity as a pile of dry bones that puppet masters have to animate weekly? And two, how do we let love's energy flow through us to the religious folks around us so that they might see the pile of bones for what it is? Thank you. The Irreverend Sean Smith.
Well, I have to say I never had that picture in my mind before now, but I sure have it from this day forward. You talk about a horror story turning out nice. This writing by Sean is quite good. You know, we started out with, you know, Friday the 13th had nothing on this story at all. And then all of a sudden, you know, we turn out with The Sound of Music at the end. So that takes a lot of talent to be able to do that, Sean. So number one, thank you. But I do embrace that. I am embracing, everybody knows I'm a little slow. I take a little time to deliberate things and consider things, maybe sometimes a little longer than others. But yeah, you know, it has come to the point where that I think we're all realizing there's just nothing. Number one, there is no gospel in Christianity. There is none.
Now, let's just define gospel. Gospel is?
The gospel is good news.
Oh, so you're saying that there's no good news in Christianity?
Well, this good news is without qualification. All of the supposed good news in Christianity, you have to qualify for that. You have to do something. You have to believe. You have to give. You have to do. So, yeah, they've got good news, if and but or maybe. And then they have to explain why it don't work when you even qualified for if and but or maybe. They come up with new ones. So, yeah, there's no good news in that. The gospel is a consistent story that was designed by God and Christ before the foundations of the world. And we are privileged and honored to know that story.
In the presence of love and wisdom, the only two things that preceded time itself.
Yes, I agree.
Okay.
I agree completely. It is
sometimes,
indeed.
Sometimes, family, I have an idea that I think would really be nice coming out of Mike's mouth. And Mike says, I think he says, I'm not clever enough to say that. I think that's what he's actually
exactly.
saying.
I don't want to say things people know I would never come up with.
Half the time he'll throw it back to me and say, yes.
You say that, yeah.
Yeah.
We're excited about the journey that Sean is on. We love him. We support him. His story, everybody has heard now, we hope. And he is one of our true American heroes that has given his life for all of the rest of us and has suffered the consequences that are just almost unspeakable, you know, and it's a difficult thing for Sean to talk about, but he has told you his story, just like we heard Nardos's story. These stories, folks, are just, whether you're coming from being a pastor into understanding the gospel or coming out of PTSD from being in combat-like area and recovery zones of crashes and injuries and all of that, devastating home life, family, whatever it is, the gospel has a perfect fit for you. This is not a something that you have to lose weight to fit into. This is not something you have to grow to fit into. This is not something you have to change your attitude to fit into. This is not something you have to change your ways to fit into. The gospel fits you exactly where you are perfectly, and it will grow and mold and change as things change in your life. But those things will change effortlessly, not because of your fasting and prayer, just simply because of the suit you wear, the suit of the gospel. Man, they say clothes makes the man. Let me tell you what, why don't you slip on the suit of the gospel and let it make you into something you never dreamed you would ever be.
Personally tailored for every single individual.
Every single one. There's no such thing as a bad fit.
No, it's not off the rack. This is personally tailored for you. Hey, thank you, Sean Smith, the Irreverend Sean Smith, fastest dung slinger in the South. Now, next week, we would like you all to be present for the investiture of Sean Smith.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yes, he's been granted a doctorate by the Gospel Revolution. His doctorate is in crapology. And as you can see from his little rant here about skeletons, he's pretty good with that crap. So next week will be the investiture of Sean Smith as a doctor of crapology. And by the way, we've always had titles for our people. We love titles. That's why I'm a doctor, you know. I'm a doctor of anything I please to be. And now the apostle who you're listening to here has his limitations, but he leans on me a lot, you know, mm-hmm. because an apostle must lean on a doctor in that respect. And soon he'll have two doctors to lean on, myself and Sean Smith. We weren't able to do your investiture today, Sean, because we're too busy at the moment. We're in Las Vegas playing the machines, but next week we will be back home and we will take care of your doctorate investiture.
And one thing I want to say at this point is, you know, I think I'm going to start claiming my title as Colonel Williams.
I think you should, Colonel.
Yeah. I mean, that's real. I really am a Kentucky Colonel. So
you are.
Yeah. And, you know, it was Colonel Tom Parker was Elvis's manager, and he was a colonel by the same means and reasons. And Colonel Sanders and Johnny Depp is a Kentucky colonel.
Is he now?
Yeah, he is. He is from Kentucky, and they coloneled him. So this was, my gosh, at least 30 years ago, maybe even more. That I was speaking in the hometown of Colonel Sanders, and the mayor of the town came to the meeting and interrupted the meeting and bestowed upon me the title of Colonel. So,
do I have to call you Colonel?
Yes, that's what I want.
Okay, can I just stop at Kerr?
No. But yeah, Sean, thank you so much for writing. And yes, we do see this. We are eye to eye on this. And we really encourage you to keep writing and keep talking. You are a very unique individual. And now this is where I've got to tell my story about unique, my joke. All right. So are you ready? This is the best joke I've got. I don't have any better than this. This is my best one. How do you catch a unique rabbit?
Like this?
No. Unique up on him. How do you catch a tame rabbit?
Unique up on him?
Tame way. Unique up on him. Now, that's the best I got, folks. So, you know, if you want me to do a comedy routine, that's going to be the beginning and the end of it. I love that joke. But, yeah, speaking of unique rabbits, we've got one with Sean for sure.
Thank you, Sean. Never been a sinner. I never sinned. I don't know if this was an email. I've got them all bagged up together this week, Mike. So I've got emails and what came off Facebook and comments off www.gospelrevolution.com. Mm-hmm. This comment come off a recent post quoting the book. Connie Lynn Nelson writes, "Love it, Mike. So grateful that you wrote this book." She's talking about one, the gospel according to Mike.
My goodness.
Colonel Mike, actually. I have a friend right now who is having that IN moment. What's she mean, IN moment? In moment. What's that?
I don't know. She'll have to follow up and let us know.
She must be talking about something you wrote in the book. But anyway, and she is having it through reading your book. It's so wonderful to be a part of seeing friends go through this. Thanks again, Mike, for putting gospel to paper where it could get into so many hands. Whoop-ee.
Aw. How sweet. Goodness gracious. That was worth writing the book for.
I reckon. You know, we've had a lot of excellent comments about this book. It's had some terrific comments on Amazon. One, The Gospel According to Mike. Go to Amazon and get it. It's only $3 for a Kindle edition. Anything up to 25 odd for a hardcover. And you can also get it in a soft cover paperback as well. I have a copy and I love it. I loved reading through it. I loved helping to edit it with Jeff Robertson and many other people. But the core of it is never going to leave you. Once you've read it, you'll never be the same, I promise you. Somewhere I came over this on another website. Kendall Brown says, I believe the Bible enough to seek to understand not only what it says, but what it means.
I love this. Please listen closely to this.
Enough to study the context of the text. Enough to honor its original languages, the fact that words don't always mean the same thing over time and that some words do not translate. Enough to realize that the King James Version contains wonderful poetic language that inspires and comforts, but it also contains horrendous translation errors. Enough to know that the Bible did not fall out of the sky leather-bound in the King James Version. Enough to attempt to understand that the text without context is a train wreck. Enough to know that councils of men, often with political agendas, fought over which books would be included in the biblical canon. As is often the case, those with less power lost. Enough to know that God did not stop speaking when they closed the canon. Enough to know that the Protestant Bible is not the oldest version of the Bible. Enough to see the Bible as a tool of liberation and not a means of oppression. Enough to know that Africans had God before they had the Bible. Enough to recognize that when it was written, women were property and slavery was acceptable. Just because it's in the Bible doesn't make it right. Enough to know that it never claims to be a science book. Enough to know that it's not a manual on all things related to sex and gender. Enough to know the Bible is not God. Enough to realize that the full revelation of God does not begin and end with Genesis and Revelation. Enough to realize that theologies and religious perspectives have histories that can and should be explored and critiqued. Enough to realize that God is big enough to handle my questions and problems with the text. Enough to realize that my denomination of origin did not always give me permission to ask the difficult questions of the text. Enough to realize that being a faithful Christian does not necessarily equate to good interpretation skills. Enough to realize that devotional Bible reading is not the same as biblical research. Enough to realize that racists used the Bible and their narrow view of God to justify slavery, and not much has changed. Enough to believe that the letter can and has killed many individuals, but the Spirit gives life. Copyright Kendall Brown, 2017. We don't care where the truth comes from. We just love the truth.
Boy, for sure. I've never seen anything written that was more of what I wish I had been smart enough to say than this is. Every line of it is very informative, very revealing. And it holds a book called the Bible in place and yet gives it these parameters that are absolutely correct. And within those, as long as you're searching and you take all of these things into consideration as you search, you're going to find truth. You're going to find truth. That's been my experience.
You can find that article up on our website under articles, www.gospelrevolution.com, and just click on resources and go down to articles, and you'll see that's the most recent article.
We're human beings, folks. We're not human doing. We're human beings, folks. We're not human doing. We're human beings, folks. We're not human doing.
Gospel Revolution.
We also heard this week from Danny Rogers. Danny said, when will we see Don Bartlett on YouTube? I'm on YouTube, Danny, but the answer is probably never in the way that you mean. What did Dirty Harry say? A good man knows his own limitations. And my limitations are mainly in time. I've already got more on my plate than I can handle in the next decade. So what can I say? Probably you won't see me. Jeff Robertson's videos are excellent, just superb. Mike Williams' videos, they're just professionally created out of Randy French's sound laboratory up in Grand Haven, Michigan. But mate, for me, I'm just going to keep doing what I know I can do best. And that's probably not going to include YouTube. Now, of course, if enough of you band together and each of you send me $100, you know, anything is possible. The Lord works in mysterious ways, Danny. So, now, Danny also contacted me, private message to me on Facebook, and he said, "Hello, Beres, it's me again, Danny. I hope all is well with you and the missus. I'm hoping that you and Mike might be able to give some insight on the Ananias and Sapphira story in the book of Acts. It seems to go against everything I've learned about grace." Certainly does, doesn't it, Danny? Even the name Ananias, he says, means God is gracious. In this story, I have sadly not been able to feel God's grace. I know this is due to my own lack of understanding. Well, not always, Danny, but it could be. But let's examine this. He says, "And I look forward to your reply, your friend Danny." You certainly are, Danny. You're a wonderful friend of the Gospel Revolution. Mike, Ananias and Sapphira, we've covered this quite a number of times.
Danny, thanks for sending us this. This cannot be covered too many times. Let me say this first, and that is the fact that you see a contradiction excites me to no end. It's when we fail to see the contradictions that we are stuck. But yes, it does indeed disagree with everything you know about, number one, the gospel of peace. Declaration very strongly worded in Isaiah that after the cross, God himself saying, "I will never be angry with you, nor even rebuke you, saith the Lord. And the covenant of my peace shall not be removed off of the earth from henceforth and forever, saith the Lord." So we've got a lot of saith the Lord about the subject. Now we've got Acts that saith this. So what do we hold up to the possibility of not being an accurate account or a true account? Well, again, we go back to the scriptures, and so our solid point, our go-to point, is the scriptures. I can tell you that God himself, through the prophet Isaiah, swore that after the cross, he would never be angry, and he would not even rebuke people anymore. Quite an alarming statement, one that I have to tell you that the Christian community has ignored completely. We don't ignore this declaration and this prophecy that was fulfilled at the cross. Now, you not only have Ananias and Sapphira who dropped dead because they lied to the Holy Ghost about how much money they were going to give. And if this is a truth, then we would still see it happening today. So now think about this. Now, it wasn't just him, but also King Herod, who simply because he gave a great speech and didn't say God is the one who is in charge of all great speeches, that he fell dead and was eaten with worms. Now, if it was truth then, it would be truth now. And if it's truth now, there'd be one element we would need at every church service. You would need a line of ambulances backed up and hearse backed up to the front door of the church of every church meeting ever held around planet Earth, because people would be dropping dead like flies. If this was a lie to the Holy Ghost, and because of that they were stricken dead, then you're going to have to like I said, the funeral home business is going to be really grateful for this, because all people have to do is go to church. And if they don't tithe, because when you become a member of a church, you're committing to tithing 10% of your income. And by not doing so, you're doing exactly the same thing as Ananias and Sapphira did. Any fudging at all. So how much would the Holy Ghost get mad about? You know, half the value of your property, 10% of the value of your property. 90%, 99%, 99.9%. You know, a lie is a lie. And so obviously there's something wrong here because this is after the cross. That's what we have to gather in. King Herod being stricken and eaten with worms was after the cross. Now, the one thing we know about the early church is that they did not embrace the gospel of peace. They were still filtering everything through their lens of a God who is judging people and cursing people. And even beyond even the concepts of the Old Testament, God was very clear with his judgment in the Old Testament. You never had to wonder whether or not it was the judgment of God. You see, somebody didn't just fall down dead of something unknown. You knew what it was. Like, you're now a pillar of salt. There extremes like that, you know, happened that you knew there was nothing ambiguous about the judgment or the wrath or the anger of God at all. These are all very questionable, to say the least. As to what actually caused their death. Did they die? I think that the account that they died is probably true. We don't know whether they died as the results of somebody poisoning them. We don't know whether or not they died as a result of having both eaten lunch and, you know, took a chicken out of the fridge that they shouldn't have been eating. We just don't know. Would it, though, have been the perception of those living at the time that this was the judgment of God? It would have indeed been their perception. You know, there's a lot of people say that perception is reality. And I like to say that perception is a view of reality. It is not reality. But you can create your own reality, but it would be only yours and yours alone. So this is a perception that created a alternate reality away from the gospel. And I think that is the scriptural view of Ananias and Sapphira and also of King Herod, who dropped dead, according to the apostles. He dropped dead strictly because he gave a great speech. Now, he wasn't preaching or teaching the gospel. He just gave a great speech and didn't end it by, God gave me the gift to be able to say this. Well, by now we would have had every politician in America dead. Every politician around the world would be dropping dead who did a great job. So you see, we just don't see that following out. If it is after the cross and we don't see it continuing today, we know there's something wrong with the story.
This story begins in the previous chapter, and it centers around the thought that everybody had what they needed. Some people sold what they had to share it with others. Not to share it with the Lord.
Yes.
To share it with others. And they laid down at the apostles' feet, and distribution was made unto every man. This is verse 35 of the previous chapter, according as they had need. Now, this is the first recorded historic event of what is claimed to be communism. In fact, what it is communalism. Which is a big difference. But it is where the property of all become the property of many. Now, I know I'm going to get philosophical pushback on that, but look, we don't have enough time to go into the history of all of this. Now, if you look back, the son of consolation, and verse 36, and Hoses, or Joseph, who by the apostles was surnamed Barnabas, a Greek name, which is being interpreted the son of consolation, a Levite, and of the country of Cyprus. So he was a Cypriot Levite. Now the Levites were due to receive from the other tribes of Israel. This man was obviously Jewish, and they were given the tithes and offerings of the they were given the tithes of Israel because they had no property of their own. Number one, number two, they had no they didn't inherit property, and so they were given the tithes of Israel. And the other reason is because if you wanted a marriage certificate or a death certificate, you went to the temple And the people who were the public servants of the day were Levites. Now, everyone likes to talk about the second half of this story without referencing the whole story. I want to know what a Levite was doing with enough money that he was able to lay it down at the feet of the apostles. That's the first thing I'd like to know. The second thing I'd like to know is, why didn't the apostles keep running the church? Here, the apostles are running the church. You go forward five or six chapters and suddenly now it's not the apostles. The apostles have all scarpered. For some reason, they've run away from Jerusalem. They cannot stand or abide what's happening there. Now, instead of the apostles running the church, you've got James and the elders, whoever they are. So here is the second wrinkle we have in this story. Now, we come to chapter 5, but a certain man named Ananias with Sapphira, his wife, they sold something and kept back some of the money for themselves. Do we know what the rules were governing this cultural concept at the time? No, we don't. Do we know that Peter had a word of prophecy that they were going to slip off the planet and not go home for soup that night? No, we don't. Do we know that this was written from the perspective of the onlookers? Well, what other perspective did they have, like Michael said? So, we have problem after problem after problem with this story, not even to mention that the possible problem is the story real. We don't know. Now, we presume it to be real because the book was written by a historian. But these books were added to time and time again. So what do we make of this? The only thing you can make of this, Danny, is this. This was not the rule. This was the exception. And as an exception, it must be viewed as an exception. As Michael said, if it was a rule, if this was the way God wanted to deal, hell, you wouldn't have ATMs in modern churches. You'd have first aid stations or prayer for resurrection or something. So,
Don, thank you so much for adding to those comments for Danny. Like I said, we can't cover this too much. It is a point that people recognize the contradictions, but like I said, I'm very grateful that you're able to recognize the contradiction. The mind that cannot see the contradiction is a mind that has been manipulated into accepting what they're told. You're not using your brain if you do not see the contradiction.
And if there is any one thing for which Christian denominations are absolutely known for, you cannot ask questions.
Or think for yourself.
Listen in your office, in your car, or even your neighborhood bar. You can listen with your whole family.
At the close of December, Michael, I heard from a gentleman by the name of Jonathan D. Nicholas. I don't believe I was familiar with the name prior to this, but he wrote, "Thank you, Don, for all you do in being a living blessing and spreading the truth of the gospel." Maybe you need to talk to my wife. She might have another opinion on that. I started hearing the sound of a new word back in 1984 while regrettably attending New Life Bible College, brackets Norval Hayes.
Yeah, my goodness.
No doubt we have similar backgrounds, and I recall seeing Mike back in the day as well. Yes, we do have similar backgrounds, Jonathan. It has been a wonderful journey of peeling the onion layer by layer. So thankful for the engrafted word and incorruptible seed. Perhaps we can catch up sometime by phone, Skype, or Google Hangout. I would be honored to help you, and if I must, Mike. Wait till he hears you're a colonel, mate. And he's only a lowly major.
I know. And talking like this, he may get demoted to private.
Oh, my. Now you make me scared that I said
it.
And then
the brig is coming real close behind these comments, I'm telling you.
He said, I'd be honored to help you, and if I must, Mike, with the work of being a resource for the ministry. Also, I relocated from Chicago to Houston recently, and I'm looking for others to fellowship with locally. Any introductions? Many blessings. Jonathan D. Nicholas. Now, I have Jonathan's phone number. I've got his email address here. If you're in Houston and you want to arrange some meetups, just email me, freedom@gospelrevolution.com.
Ah, he's in Houston?
Yeah. Just moved there from Chicago recently.
My goodness.
So if you are down that way and you would like to meet this man, he sounds like he's a man of substance. He does not sound like he's a fly-by-nighter. So Jonathan D. Nicholas, thank you so much for your private message on Facebook. I will. I've already answered you and said that we are dealing with this on today's PowerCast, but I'll still get back to you and let you know what comes our way. We are so blessed to have people like you who want to support this ministry, and yes, there are things that you could do for us. If you just keep listening to this podcast, I'm going to be relaying something that James Gustafson, I think, said. So, and the same applies to you. And this is where we have our area of need at the moment. And just keep listening. In a few minutes, you'll hear it. James Gustafson wrote, "Don, if you give me an assignment of webcasts to listen to, I will get right at it. To reaffirm, you want like a table of contents of each webcast and a little summary of subject material? I await your reply, James." You bet, James. That's exactly what I want. Wouldn't it be nice to go into www.gospelrevolution.com, hit the search button, and you put in Ananias and Sapphira and see all the things that have been written, preached on, taught on, shared about in the podcast? We don't have that at the moment, and your input is going to make that possible, and we so appreciate it.
Yeah. Type in Ananias and Sapphira, and out pops Ananias and Sapphira.
So. I thought you were going to say up pops, but no, I don't think they're coming up. I don't think resurrection's in their future somewhere.
No.
When you're feeling down, or you got the case of the blues. When you're feeling down, or you got the case of the blues. When you're feeling down, or you got the case of the blues. Why don't you listen to the Gospel Revolution?
Victor Brennan writes, "Listened to the excellent interview with Nardos. Very exciting news indeed."
Yeah.
It is, isn't it, Vic?
Oh.
Yeah. Don't forget to buy him a buffet at the Calgary Inn, the Carriage Inn. Just a correction. It was James McDermott, not James Gustafson, who first made contact with Nardos. All the best. Hey, thanks for correcting us there. I stand corrected.
We are sorry. Oh, so sorry. Very sorry. I'm sorry. We'll never do it again.
Yes, that is James McDermott. James McDermott is on the board of directors there at Grace Conferences. And James' story is really quite amazing. He struggles with a lot of physical ailments due to an assault that he went through a number of years ago and was almost beaten to death. But boy, you talk about somebody going through a horrible situation and coming out with a wonderful attitude about the whole thing and still going on, even though he's still dealing with all of these side effects from this. It really is. He really is. He's number one. He's just a sweet fellow. And James, if you're listening, just please know that we appreciate you and all that you do. James puts his name on all of the checks that come out of Grace Conferences and works directly hand in hand with our own Vic DeBrennan there. James is just not a guy that ever wants to be up front and known. He's just behind the scenes doing all kinds of wonderful things. And it was James McDermott who originally talked with our own Nardos Kabidi. So the direct contact with Nardos coming into the Mike Williams Ministries and the Gospel Revolution and into being vice president is directly a result of James McDermott's efforts.
There you go, James. Wonderful. Now, I heard from Danny Miniskanyans this week. He said, "Hey guys, talking to you and me, I don't see Perfection 4 on YouTube. It skips from 3 to 5. Well, see, that's the whole thing. It was a gag, Danny. It's a joke. It's imperfect. Don't you get it, Danny? We don't get
it. It was so perfect we didn't need to put it up.
Yeah, yeah. We I mean, we don't get your music and you don't get our numbers. Oh, don't worry. He keeps going. Also heard last week's podcast yesterday. Started cracking up when Mike said he doesn't understand some of the music I send. LOL. Trust me, you ain't seen nothing yet. Oh, boy. Here's another one I like, Call It What You Want. And it was named Call It What You Want. And it was fun kind of music. I don't actually get it, but it was fun music. I could have danced to that. Well, you know, several years ago, maybe. I would have loved dancing to that. So, Danny, thank you, mate.
Yeah. Thanks, Danny.
And you've brought us to a great place because now up on the website are a whole brand new series of videos that Mike made in the Sound Laboratory up in Grand Haven, Michigan, with Randy French. Mm-hmm. Thank you again, Randy. Never gets old saying thank you for what you've done for the gospel revolution.
Yeah, and Randy never gets tired either. So sometime we wish he would get tired.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Those of you who know Randy, when I say intense, you know what I mean.
Sometimes I feel like a dog on a chain with this guy. I mean, he just...
A very big dog and a very short chain. Perfection videos. They're up online now. They're on the front page. And I'm rearranging the video section under resources on the top menu. And the reason I'm doing that is because it's just really... we want to make it easier for you to be able to find anything you want to find. And these series like audio series of the Seven Pillars of Wisdom or Things That Changed at the Cross or some of the outstanding series that Mike has brought to us out of various conferences, things like Predestination and so forth. And then in the video section, you've got the Great High Priest. We have the Fruits of Righteousness. We're going to add into that these latest three sets of videos. We just want to make it easier for you to find things so you don't have to go trawling all the way back through all of the videos on the video page. There'll be a specialty video page called Special Series, and you'll have them all up there. Hope you enjoy it. www.gospelrevolution.com. Victor Brennan sent us a video by Dr. Spong.
Yeah, I loved this. I remember when we got it, I had to call, I called you, Don, and had to comment on it. And boy, what a true statement that the gentleman made. To claim to have all the answers and then refuse any questions. Oh, man. The irony of it all.
Christianity has all the answers until they don't have the answers, and then it becomes a mystery. Doesn't matter that Paul said, I'm revealing this mystery to you. Doesn't matter that Jesus said he's revealing a mystery to us. Nope. It's a mystery. Don't you know God
still a mystery.
Works in mysterious ways?
Yeah. I keep getting saved over and over again here, and it's been glorious. I'm excited to be a part of all this.
Now, I heard from Phil Britton a few days ago. He said, hi, Don. We're hearing so much about fake news these days. He says Christian leaders have it all over the media when it comes to fake news. They created the fake gospel and they've been stubbornly promoting it for 2,000 years. Here is just a small sampling of their fake news. Here is just a small sampling of their fake news headlines. Every child is born spiritually dead. Sin is still alive and well. Satan rules the world. You must believe to be redeemed. The new creation never happened at the cross. Heaven, it's only for obedient Christians. Future judgment looms over humanity. Jesus never paid it all. Study to show yourself approved. Pray without ceasing. Work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. Best wishes to you and Mike for the new year. If you were amused and intrigued by that, you need to go to www.greatestgospeltruth.com, www.greatestgospeltruth.com. Download a book that Phil wrote for free. You've heard Mike and I go through the knock, knock, who's there joke. Well, if that sounds like pig slop to you, then you're going to love Phil's book, The Greatest Gospel Truth. It's a simple yet powerful expose of how religion has thoroughly corrupted the gospel of grace. As you just heard him say, Their fake news headlines are fantastic, and they're perpetual. They never, ever let up. But if you want to learn how to distinguish the lies from the truth, go to that website, download a free book, and let us know. Send us in a review of that book. Let us know what you think.
Absolutely.
Oh, be ye glad, oh, be ye glad, every death that you ever had has been paid up in full by the grace of the Lord. Be ye glad, be ye glad, be ye glad.
Here is a comment. I wrote an article on fulfilled prophecies about Jesus Christ, and up on the web there under articles, www.gospelrevolution.com. And Gerald wrote, "Don, as you stated, truth is truth, wherever you find it. I am confused. This article indicates if we so choose to exercise our birthright, that is salvation, my understanding is that we are all guaranteed our birthright, whether or we choose or not to acknowledge Christ's fulfillment of prophecy is to acknowledge revelation as being fulfilled. So to recognize the anger on humans, also fulfilled. So my ultimate question is, what or why would Jesus be destined to return and rule on earth? Is this your belief? Lions lay with lambs, and humans flock to the mountain for the counsel of Jesus upon his yet to return. I also search for truth where I can find it, and I look to the gospel in the many archives provided by you and Mike." Okay. Gerald, I'm not sure I understand your question. My thrust in republishing that, it was published by another organization. Was it the Seventh-day Adventists or someone? I just don't remember right now. But I do remember that there was enough good stuff in it to make it worth republishing on our website. Here's what I believe. I believe that everything was fulfilled at the cross.
Mm-hmm. That's what the scriptures say. So this is a knowledge that the gospel revolution carries with it, the knowledge of the fulfillment of all things. And so, yeah, no, if you've gone through much of the material on the website, you will know that there the second coming happened when Jesus rose from the dead. Am I to say there's not a third coming? No, I'm just telling you that the second one has already happened. Jesus can do whatever he wants to. But that is not something that is part of Scripture. The whole end time teaching is not a part of Scripture. The end time was the cross. The end of the world was the cross. The fulfillment of all Scripture was the cross. The fulfillment of the law was the cross. So we're not looking for anything except to live free. That's the only thing we're looking for. The lion has already laid down with the lamb, and that happens inside of every human being. Your contradictions become at peace with each other. Human beings are loaded with contradictions. And the gospel gives you peace with your own contradictions. It's a powerful, powerful picture of the results of the gospel in an individual's life.
Gerald, I will write a response to you on the website, but I'll probably only say that we handled this in this PowerCast so that you can hear exactly what Mike had to say as well as what I responded with. There, here is another article we got a comment on, another article called Translations, Interpretations, Machinations, and Theology, in which I took the time to lay out some of the problems with the Bible as we have it, particularly the New Testament and particularly modern translations. And by modern, I mean anything that was written after about the year 300. I count as a modern translation simply because that is when the whole heinous concept of let's just rewrite the Bible in our own image started. Marcel Roos commented, he said, "There is a Dutch translation that is really without the opinion or theology of the writer. I am very happy with this translation. It's on a website called
http://schriftwort.nl, schriftwort.nl, and this is without the opinion of the translator. Sorry, in the Netherlands, everything is a little bit better. Thank you, Marcel. Thank you for reminding us, mate. And one day I will get back to my favourite Dutch club and I'll be getting a mouthful of oliebollen and a mouthful of poffertjes and a mouthful of croquettes. But in the meantime, Marcel Roos is, I believe he's referencing the Dutch version of Knox, K-N-O-C-H, Mr. Knox version, called the Concordant Literal Version, in which he always and only uses one English word for any one given Greek word or Hebrew word. It is very, very literal. Now, I've used Young's literal translation, which is very similar, but it's not nearly as literal as this. This is a version which is well worth downloading for free. Go to Interlinear Scripture for All, or ISA, or scriptureforall.com, and you can download this. Now, I use this as my ultimate go-to because this man was not just extremely talented. Now, the CLV, the Concordant Literal Version, will give you the Greek and the Hebrew. Now, the Hebrew I need because I don't know Hebrew. I can get to the Hebrew via the Septuagint, which was written by Jewish scholars, so I can actually kind of get to it. But it's the Greek in the New Testament, the Greek in the Septuagint version of the Old Testament, where this is absolutely a huge help, because what it does is it'll give you the case, the tense, it'll give you so much information about every single word. And we don't write the same in different languages. We write differently. We use words in English that presume that it's a first-person word or a third-person word. When I say I, that's first person. When I say you, that's second person. When I say they, that's third person. But sometimes these are all in Greek, in particular, these are all prefixes and suffixes. Yeah, and you've got to read the whole word. And the whole word you do not get in James Strong's. All you get in James Strong's is a lemma or the root. And even then, sometimes it's a little bit iffy. James Strong's was good for his time, but if you want the CLV, which Marcel, I believe, is referring to, then by all means go to a Scripture for All, download that. You'll get a King James, you'll get a Dutch version if you want it, you'll get the CLV English version, and you'll get the original languages. Now, Mike, are you feeling old today?
No, not at all. Should I be?
In Facebook, you said, Mike Williams is feeling old. And then you continued and you said, Mike Williams preaches on grace in Grand Haven, Michigan, 25 April 1993 at Resurrection Life Church in Grand Haven.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God, this thing.
That's some video. Mate, you had hair. Hey, Mike.
Oh, my gosh.
Mike, you had hair.
I know. And I spoke with one of my friends the other day, and they have younger children, and they saw the video playing. And I think it was his daughter that spoke up, and after seeing the video, and she says, well, I like him better without hair. So. That was tough on my pride to release that, to be honest with you.
Well, you know, the funny thing was that I got a call from Randy, and Randy said, oh, listen, do you think we could put that up? And I said, heck yeah, put that up. Yeah, but thanks to Randy French. Now, this was, according to Randy, I believe, this was the video that he found 20 years after and wanted to see, you know, what a loser you were. And ended up saying that made more sense than anything I've ever heard in my life.
And said he had never heard it before when he was the one that recorded it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, anyway. Well, let's listen to what people said about this recording that was made in Grand Haven back in 93. Kent Lindsay said, Mike Williams, you had it then, you have it now, and I'm not talking about the hair this time.
Aw.
was taken into seventh heaven earlier today with your radio interview on the December 29 podcast. You can find that just on podcasts under resources on www.gospelrevolution. And following testimony, we all have, quote-unquote, it. That is the very righteousness of Christ, the joy of the Lord. Robert May said, it was about a year after this video was made that Dawn and I took a road trip to an Indiana church to hear Mike speak. We had left our longtime church a few years before in 91 and had joined a full gospel church. Same old girl with a different dress. We had begun to see so much more grace in the Bible, but not so much in the churches. Hearing Mike Williams was confirmation to what we'd been seeing. We invited Mike out to speak with a small home group of us in Piatone, Illinois, and had him out twice. He had put together so much more.
Mm.
And in such a great order and detail. One thing he said in conversation after his teaching always stuck with me. He said, a teacher's job is to get a student to the point where he learns from Jesus. That is the way I saw it too, and the reason I left both churches never to join another.
Wow.
How about that? I could not submit my sons to the same hurdles I had to overcome, too much to unlearn in order to come to a knowledge of the truth. God loves us all.
Mm.
And lastly, Pep Washburn said, wow, does that bring back memories? It was right around that time that I started questioning the standard Orthodox preaching. It was just a couple of years later that the leadership of my local church charged the congregation, do not go and hear Mike Williams in Wisconsin Rapids.
Mm.
Of course, being possessed by the demon of rebellion,
that Pep.
I drove down and heard encouragement that I was not alone, nor demon-possessed. Just a few years after that, I was called before a tribunal of inquiry, which ended in my removal from all positions of visibility in that church.
Wow.
One of the best things that ever happened to me, being quite a journey. Now, that's Pep Washburn.
Yeah. Another great testimony of the gospel.
If you want to read a great book, go and buy Letters of Minniminiki, Touching Spirit. It's not a very expensive book. I bought mine and it's great. Pep's just written his second book.
Another one.
The Last Oak, I think it's called, Michael.
And all of this came out of attending a meeting quite similar to the one, as he's pointed out, as this one that is posted on the website. So, I went back and I listened to this and, you always think you remember what you were saying back then. And and what was this in the 80s?
93.
I wasn't absolutely sure of what I was saying back at that time. But this was really strong gospel, for Christians for sure. So if you haven't listened to this, now you may want to hide your eyes when you are watching the video clip because, oh my gosh, yeah, that was difficult for me to see. You don't know a man who is more pleased with his aging process from that point to where I'm at today than me. So yeah, if these testimonies were powerful, and just think of it, folks. A man as brilliant as Pep Washburn was inspired from those early days, about the same time as he said. So these were the things he was hearing that's led to not only him, but, we have a lot of people who've written books out of hearing the gospel from meetings such as that. Some of them just one meeting. Some of them have been, coming along for all these years with us, just like Pep has. This is a shock for me. The only thing I was doing is sharing from my heart what I was seeing. People give me a lot of credit, and I have to say the only thing, if I've done anything at all in this thing called the gospel revolution, all I did is just think a little while longer, just a little bit longer than the average person, and we are where we are.
I think that is so underrated. I've been wrestling with a way to achieve something that needs done about our website. And as I was wrestling with what was the best way to do this, I had no answer. I had no way of, I couldn't figure my way around it. I just sat back in my chair, and instead of messing around with a game of chess on the computer or talking with anyone or calling anyone or taking any phone calls, for about 5, maybe 7 minutes, I just sat and thought,
mm-hmm.
And I just, it was very difficult for me to marshal my thoughts to keep focused, but I did. And out of the blue came this solution. I thought, well, of course, why didn't I think of this earlier?
Yeah.
And I think you've just touched on the reason, because I didn't, I didn't think for it just a little bit longer.
Yeah. I remember, Brother Shambach.
W. Shambach.
I had so much fun with this man. He just loved me to pieces too. And, had just the most unusual friendship with him. Going out, walking around in the desert out in Palm Springs, when we were doing meetings out there together, doing tent meeting with him in St. Louis. Goodness, I got to experience a piece of the history of this old time religion from one of the best. I mean, you just, RW's tagline was,
"You don't have any trouble. All you need is faith in God."
And that was on every show, every time he got up. And he had this message that he taught, and he could pull a preaching session from between the lines of the verses, not just the verse, but he could get a whole sermon from between the lines. And he took the verses about the Garden of Gethsemane and the prayer in the garden. And of all that you've ever heard, you've never heard anybody preach on this. The line that he focused on and did an entire 1 hour sermon on was, "And Jesus went a little further." So maybe I got that from RW, just to think a little further, you know, go a little further. Jesus went a little further than the disciples was able to accomplish a lot just because he went a little further.
Well, let me see. He was also a mentor to Rod Parsley, wasn't he? And I mean, Parsley took everything from the braces, the suspenders, and the preaching style and everything, I reckon.
Yeah, he and Summerall, I think, was his number one guy. But he
Lester.
Did, yeah. Yeah. Lester Summerall was his mentor in chief. RW certainly was a part of his inspiration also.
And now for something completely different.
You know, Don, one thing I want to cover before we close out the program, and we're not going to beleaguer the point, because I want to put this out there for people to think about. And I really want your comments and your response to the things that we're going to share with you just now. Now, we've already shared a great deal with you about the difference between knowledge and belief. We know that Paul's desire was to know Christ. The issue of belief was not the focus of Paul's teaching. It was knowing Christ. And so the difference between knowledge and belief. The other day I was watching a documentary, and there was a gentleman who was speaking a lot during the documentary, and had several clips from him. And it was an artist by the last name of Hirst, H-I-R-S-T, an English fellow who's about 40, 45 years old or so. And he was talking about, in reference to this documentary, and was talking about beliefs. And so my ears kind of perked up. And he said something that was very remarkable and impacted me immediately. The gaps in the story is where you find your beliefs. Man, I tell you, all of a sudden, I saw all kinds of gap analogies, you know, gaps between the boards, gaps between this, gaps between that. He was very strong in his certainty about where beliefs are found, and that beliefs are found where our knowledge ends. He continued on with this, and from what he was saying, I began to draw my conclusions from that also, in that beliefs take up where your understanding leaves off. If you know something and you understand it, there's no reason for belief.
Now, if I hear you right, I think I'm hearing you say that there is a big difference between facts and faith.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And we find faith or beliefs in the spaces where our story is not consistent and we don't have answers. Belief is for what you don't know, not what you do know. Just like Paul made reference to hope, why would a man hope for that which he already sees? The same is applicable to beliefs or faith, any of those terms that you want to use. The other thing that this gentleman said was, I think we are all looking for one whole true story that makes sense.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh. It's like I wanted to jump into the screen and say, here it is, here it is, here it is.
Wow.
We have one whole story that makes sense. It's not just a whole story. It makes sense. Folks, the gospel makes sense. It makes sense that the overarching plan of God from before he created the earth was to inhabit the human race and this be his place of dwelling. It makes sense that...
Now, when I first heard you use that term was a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, you lost me on the spot simply because a story for me is like a fairy tale, or it's a story about something that might have happened. It might be a joke, but I had never put story together with reality.
Oh yeah.
I suppose I did, but I think a lot of other people might share the position where I started from.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, and I'm afraid that is the connotation that our culture usually conjures up in the mind: is a story is a fairy tale, a story. Well, that's just a story. Well, you know, you can have a news story that is true. That's a story. So we're talking about stories that make sense. We are talking about stories that make sense, and we are talking about a story. What's just like, what is your life story? So these are this is the emphasis of a story.
In the same way that history is actually a story.
It's a story.
Truth.
Yeah, history.
It even says story in the word.
It's got story in the word. And I think this gentleman is so correct in his assessments about the issue of beliefs, that beliefs are what come to the heart and the mind where knowledge has left off or understanding has left off. It's the gaps. It fills the gaps. A couple of years ago, we began to explore this. And now I would not have been able to hear this guy whatsoever if we had not covered the territory that we do. But as is always the truth with the gospel, once we understand truth from the perspective of the gospel, you can hear the clarity of that truth from many sources, even people that have no knowledge of the truth at all. Now, why would you do that? Because this story includes everybody. So there's some of this story who can come out of anybody, regardless of their, quote, beliefs or their lack of beliefs, their atheism or anything else. Because we are one with God. So we keep our ears listening for truth wherever we may hear it, and that maybe wasn't found in the Bible. But now, that along with the New Testament, we always take back to the Scriptures to see whether or not these things are true, regardless of the source. We don't negate any source just because of the morality of the source or the religion of the source. Goodness, I sat and listened to these guys sometime on the religious TV shows, and I'll tune in for just a little bit. And sometimes I get a grain of reality of truth out of them that they don't even know they've said. They don't even realize what they've said. So this is what I'm wanting to leave you with this week. And you guys think about this and come alongside and help us understand this a bit better, the issue of beliefs. And I tell you, for me, the less belief I have, the more peace I have. The more knowledge I have, the more of the story that I understand, the greater degree of the place of rest and peace that I experience in my life. And I have to tell you that as much as I have enjoyed the reality of the gospel over more than 30 years, to some degree of that gospel, I have increased in the impact of the gospel in my life over 2017. 2017 brought much more impact of the truth of the gospel onto my mind, my way of thinking, and my heart, the way I negotiate with me and navigate with others. It has increased. And I'm just wondering if you guys have experienced the same thing too. I'm almost absolutely sure that that's the case. I know it's true with Don. I know because of the closeness of our friendship and relationship, I know that the increase in his life, I've watched it, I've experienced it, of his, the way he negotiates with himself. It's just the terms that I use. You can put this any way you want. This is not a, this is how we say this thing. But I've watched Don negotiate with himself differently and navigate with others differently just over the past year. It has certainly been a part of my evolution of the gospel. This is a place I like to use the term evolution. The evolution of the gospel in my own heart and mind. So, you know, Don, before we close out this PowerCast, tell me what this is saying to you. Does this have any validity? This we might call it the gap theory about belief.
The first person who ever knocked me around the head in a friendly manner with an iron bar about this whole thing was Bowler Moyes. Bowler is somebody who came through Christianity and was very, very devoted to his church, mm-hmm. to his belief system. And I fought this tooth and nail because I don't think I understood exactly where he was coming from. But he was the first one who really woke me up to this whole concept. And slowly from then, I've begun to understand the difference between believing something and knowing something. I believe the sun is going to come up tomorrow, but until tomorrow comes, I don't know that. Mm. I believe that North Korea is not going to lob a missile at the United States anytime this week. But until the end of the week, I don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very great difference between believing and knowing, and I'm drawn to the point that you made that belief fills in the gaps between our knowledge, and it's true when you think about it. I didn't like reading this, but somebody wrote it, and I thought, dang, if that's not true. They call it faith because there are no facts.
Yeah. Yeah. Those things are just jarring, aren't they?
It was a wake-up call to me. But for some of you, you're going to hear what I just said and say, what? How dare he? Well, I'm not belittling your faith.
Yeah.
I'm not belittling what you believe is your faith, what you faith in is your faith, what you believe is your belief. I'm not doing that. What I'm saying is faith was always necessary from a biblical point of view. Faith was always necessary until the facts arrived. And as Paul said in Hebrews, what was once a shadow now is a substance. Faith is a substance.
Yes.
So...
It's no longer faith anymore.
It's not faith. It's a done deal. It's a fact now. It's knowledge.
It's substance now.
Yeah. The only other thing that I'm thinking of is something I heard on a show about quantum mechanics. When I heard about it, I thought, oh, my gosh. And here is what the gentleman said. He said, look, when Christians say to you, just believe. Just invite Jesus into your heart and just believe, and you'll be born again. Now, many of us have heard that. Many of us know exactly what he was talking about. And then he said this, why don't you say back to that Christian, can you do me a favor? Yes, what is it? I want you to believe for just 5 minutes, only 5 minutes, no longer. I want you to believe that Jesus Christ is non-existent. Now, I don't want you to imagine it. I don't want you to feel what it would be like. I want you to actually believe it. And the Christian would say back, don't be ridiculous. How could I possibly believe that? And then this gentleman said, the reason that they can't believe it is because it's unbelievable to them.
Yeah.
So you need to say to that person, well, why are you asking me to believe something when you can't believe something for 5 minutes?
Yes. No.
And it was, I mean, all of this just hits me like a ton of bricks. And I say, I'm just learning more and more every day here, mate. Belief and knowledge.
We really are. Another comment that came from this artist was, believe nothing unless it agrees with your reason. And when I heard him say that, I said, but if it agrees with your reason, it's no longer a belief. It's something you know.
Yeah.
So you can take belief into the consideration, but if belief doesn't turn into knowledge, you really have nothing. My God, folks.
Paul said, when I was a child, I spoke as a child, I acted as a child, I behaved as a child, but now I'm a man, I put away childish things.
Yeah.
Do you remember when you believed in Santa Claus?
Yeah. And to Paul's point, his insistence that it was for his own personal life, that his goal was to know Christ and the power of his resurrection. You know, the examples that Don just gave you are things that would happen tomorrow and next week. Why do we not have to believe? Because there's nothing about the gospel that is tomorrow or next week.
Hmm.
It is a done deal. This is not something we're believing will happen. There is nothing about the gospel that's about something that will or may happen in the future. Let me tell you how much of the gospel is about what may or will happen the next second or the next thousand or next million years from now. Zero. That's how much of the gospel is about the future. Nothing. So we know the story. We're not waiting for something to happen and say, oh, I believe it's going to happen. I believe it's going to happen. And like Don said, until it happens, you don't know. But folks, it's all happened. So now we know.
If you don't know something has happened, you have to faith it because there's nowhere else for your brain to go.
Exactly. And that's the thing about the completeness of the story. These things have to be. If you believe anything of the story, all of the story has to be true. You can't select parts of it. So do I know Jesus rose from the dead? Yes, just like I know every other part and phase of the gospel itself. And we know it because it's connected. We know it because it makes one beautiful big picture. This is not a scrambled mess.
If somebody said to me, you're going to win the lottery, I mean, you, Mike Williams, are going to win the Powerball and you're going to come out with $400 million. Well, the first thing I'd do, of course, is I'd fly straight down there and I'd look for the ticket in your drawer. But and a week later you won it. If that happened, if somebody said, mm-hmm. you're going to win it, and a week later you won it. If somebody said that in the third race this afternoon, number five is going to win the race, and 10 minutes later they won it, I'd believe that person. I'd believe that they could tell me other stuff that was true too, and then I would know something.
But even with that, the possibility of just random chance that it happened in that order is still there.
It is, but when you have several hundred...
You'd want to believe it.
When you have several hundred prophecies in the scriptures foretelling what was going to happen in such...
That's exactly right.
I can know that. This I can know.
Yes. This we can know.
And I don't have to believe anymore. I don't have to faith that my sins are forgiven. I don't have to faith Jesus died. I don't have to faith that he was born of a virgin. I don't have to faith any of this stuff. I simply know it because it was foretold. Now, this stuff was foretold at least 250 years before the birth of Jesus. But all it would have taken was 10 minutes before. I think that the scriptures, and I've taught on this in the GR, the scriptures are one of the reasons, they're one of the fundamental reasons why redemptionism is a done deal.
Exactly. And that's why we have Prodigious Grace.
Prodigiousgrace.com. Go there, visit at www.prodigiousgrace.com and see if you can agree with anything there. And don't forget, we're in the middle of a pledge drive. So when you hear the phone ring, answer it. Mm-hmm. If you'd like to partner with us, and not just in money, call our office on
832-318-9339.
And speak to us about how you want to participate. Or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and just spend an hour or two there. When you're done, hit the connect link and it'll put you in touch with us, or the donate link. The donate link is a very pretty link, particularly in our eyes. It's wonderful. Anything you can do to help the gospel can make all the difference for somebody else just like you, starting their own journey towards thinking for themselves. So now it's good night from myself, Beres Bartlett, from the GR Studios here in downtown bustling Eva, Alabama.
And it is good night from Mike Williams, Colonel Mike Williams, right here in South Florida, not too far from Lake Okeechobee. We are, and not too far from the beach either. More, in fact, much more close to the beach than the lake. Guys, we love you so much. I have just had a blast talking to you on the phone. Even if you're not going to contribute, and I've had folks tell me, you know, Mike, this has happened, that's happened. We're not going to commit to anything right now. And then we go on and we have a conversation about the gospel and about what's going on in life. I want to hear what's happening in your life and how we might be of a help to you. That is our joy and our pleasure. And yes, I'm calling you to get money out of you, and I hope I can get a lot. But that's not all the phone calls are about. So let's enjoy a reunion, if you will. So many of these have been reunions for me over the span of years, and I'm very grateful for it. Thank you for picking up your phones.
We hope you enjoyed today's podcast, but if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended does not mean you're right. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
It'll be better.
Judgment passed, someone apocalypsed me. I never felt like this before. Can't see evil anymore. Now the spirit of life is my Lord. Is this what I've been waiting for? When I realized I was the liar, in the twinkling of my eye I was changed. Sure was hot in that lake of fire, where my soul got rearranged. Bubbling liquid gold has some precious perfection within. I'm breaking out of the mold through the cracking of my skin. Before, this is what I've been wearing. It is the river of grace I'm in. Drink and know that you are okay, and know that you and God have always been one. Knowledge has passed away.